Peter Scholer, thank you for joining me.
I'm glad to be here.
I'd like to hear a little about your experience as the former chairperson of the Immigration and Refugee Board. What years were you there?
I was the chairperson from 1999 to 2002. Before that, for the previous 6 years, I had sat as a member, as a decision maker on the Immigration and Refugee Board.
And in your experience then and now, with the changes in December 2012, how have things changed?
Well, things have changed drastically. The inland refugee system has changed drastically. I'm assuming your listeners already know Canada really has two different refugee systems. We have the resettlement or overseas system where we bring refugees from overseas, and then secondly, within Canada, we have the inland system. That's where refugees arrive in Canada and claim refugee status here. So there have been changes to both those systems, but the more drastic changes that we're speaking about now are to the inland system.
Are we bringing in people, resettling people at the moment?
Oh, yes, we are.
From where?
Canada is one of the three leading countries in the world to resettle refugees. The United States, historically, usually brings in about 45 or 50,000 refugees per year. Canada usually brings 12 to 13,000, and Australia about 11,000. So, that's what we do ordinarily every year. In the last 2 years, however, under the current government, that number has been reduced slightly to between 9 and 10,000.
Where are we resettling people from now?
From which countries?
Yes.
Well, from all over the world. Please remember, there are approximately 15 million refugees located in the world. And refugees, by definition, are people who are outside their home country and seeking refugee protection. So Canada has refugee programs bringing people from, for example, the Middle East, including Afghanistan and Syria and Iraq, but also from East Africa, from there's camps in Thailand, Indonesia, South America. So it's from all over the world.
Tell me about the changes for inland claimants. That's people who arrive by plane or boat.
Well, not many arrive by boats these days, although if someone does arrive by a boat, usually all Canadians would know it because it makes headlines in Canada, even though a very small number come. The majority of claimants, refugee claimants who arrive in Canada, arrive either by airplane or they cross the American border. Many are not allowed to do so, but there are still some claimants that come across the border. And last year, for the first time, fewer than 10,000 refugee claimants arrived in Canada. Normally, that number is around 25,000. And the reason so few arrived was because of very drastic changes to Canada's inland system. You asked me the question, well, what are those changes? Well, principal changes are that claim process goes much faster now, so that your hearing will take place in either 60 days or in 30 days. So that's a major claim. And secondly, Canada has now created different categories of refugee claimants. So some, for example, as I say, get their claim heard in 30 days, and they then do not receive an appeal and can be immediately removed from Canada. The ones that the regular refugees who have 60 days to prepare their claim, some of them will get an appeal. But the major changes are this. The whole system goes much more quickly. The problem with that, everybody, including refugees, usually wants a reasonably prompt decision, but there has to be enough time to find a lawyer and prepare the evidence. And most critics of the system will say that 60 days and certainly 30 days is simply not enough time to find the evidence to prove the claim. The second problem is that there are some refugees, for example, you mentioned boats. Refugees who do arrive in boats are treated differently. They're automatically put in jail for 2 weeks, and if they don't have adequate identity documents, and many do not, they will then be put in, remain in prison for another 6 months, and their refugee claim will be decided while they're in prison.
I can imagine that there are people who come this way for whom jail for 6 months is better than going back to where they came from.
Well, yes, one might say that. However, there are two limitations to that. The first one is while they're in prison, that's when they have to prove their refugee claim. And it's extremely difficult to prove a refugee claim while you're in prison. It's very difficult for the lawyers to meet with you. It's very difficult to get evidence. And why refugee claimants or why refugees come to Canada is they come here for protection. So the principal thing that will deter them is not being in prison, but it's not getting a fair opportunity to prove their claim. If they don't think they're going to receive protection, that's when they won't come. And candidly, a drop to fewer than 10,000 when Canada ordinarily receives 25,000, that's a message that refugees are voting with their feet. Some people may say, well, what's the problem with that? Well, the only problem with that is that Canada is one of the wealthiest countries in the world. We've got room in this country. We bring in 250,000 immigrants per year. My God, if this country cannot receive a reasonable number of refugees, then what country can? And candidly, if you shut your system down like that, what you're really doing is not taking your fair share of refugees.
And where are the refugees going if they're not coming to Canada?
Well, in most cases, where they're going is nowhere. Remember I said refugees are outside their home country. You don't become a refugee legally, no matter how much you fear your country or a civil war, until you actually leave your country. So where those refugees are mainly going is nowhere, which means that they're in the countries contingent to where the wars are happening or where the terrible events are happening. So where are they located? For example, the Syrian conflict, there's over 1 million refugees, 1.3 million refugees now in Little Lebanon, which is a country of 4 million people. They're located in countries like Iran. They're located in countries like Kenya. And if you start thinking of the names of those countries, Tanzania, Kenya, some Ethiopia, Indonesia, Thailand, they're the poor countries of the world, the ones who have the least capacity to care for large refugee populations. So what we've really done is, with the combination of visa barriers imposed by the European countries and the two principal North American countries, we've managed to essentially seal most refugees in poor second or third world countries.
This is not necessarily the way most Canadians think of themselves or our country. Has there been a shift in the way people think about refugees?
Well, two things. First of all, you're correct that it's not how Canadians think about our country, and bravo for Canada, that in actuality, international polls about views, popular views of refugees, Canada has always, the Canadian population has always had a far more positive view of refugees than most other countries, all of the European countries or even the United States. And it's because, I think, to some degree, we're a country of immigrants. And Canada has always had a reputation of being an extraordinarily generous country towards refugees. And that, to some degree, to a large degree, is a legitimate reputation based upon the way in which our inland system worked and the way in which we resettled refugees from overseas. So in regard to all of those, the answer is yes, we have been generous. However, there has been a very significant change in the last 6 years with the current government. I've described the changes or some of the changes that have happened in our inland system. But I think more pernicious than that is the government's attitude towards refugees. And I say this without reservation that the government, principally when Mr. Kenney was the minister, but also now with Mr. Alexander, they have actually undertaken what can only be seen as a negative public relations campaign against refugees.
How so?
The endless repetition of color words such as bogus, fraudulent, queue jumpers, all of which are primarily false statements. When that is repeated to the Canadian public, we have seen a drastic shift in public perceptions of refugees in general. There's no other way to say it. I say it with great regret, but this government clearly has carried on an anti-refugee rhetoric, and it has had a significant effect on the Canadian population.
And it's quite remarkable when you think of how many people are in very responsible positions, have made great lives here and contributed to the country, and their start was as a refugee.
Well, we previously, you were talking about Flight and Freedom, which is the book being published by Maitri Foundation, and one of the objectives of that book is to show the ways in which refugees have made contributions to Canada by looking at refugees who have lived significant portions of their lives here in Canada. And I must say it's an important message that the course of our discussion now has primarily been about refugees' need for protection. And that's always the first part of the discussion. The ways in which, because people come here, some of the stories, if you work in the refugee area, they're just overwhelming the degree of suffering that has been endured by so many people. And since you are first look at the refugees come here for protection, so you cannot help but talk about persecution and those horrible events. But people that work with refugees over a long period of time also know the second truth, which is the qualities that allowed them to survive, to escape, to get here when thousands and tens of thousands didn't, often reflect a very strong, positive, optimistic character. And those qualities are often, not always, but often can be expressed in the lives they lead here in Canada. So even though I talk about refugees in terms of protection and that they require to protect them, lots of them make very positive contributions to Canada.
I've heard the term irregular arrivals. What does that mean?
Well, what irregular arrivals means is people that arrive in Canada without the proper documentation. So an irregular arrival can be someone who just doesn't has a false passport or no passport at all or no identity documents. It also can be somebody who, and often is the case, who doesn't have the appropriate visa. So what that means is that virtually all refugees, when they arrive in Canada, are irregular arrivals. I mentioned visa barriers before. So this is the requirement to have a visa before you come to Canada. Well, every country where there is strife, where there are a significant number of people fleeing the country for protection, Canada has imposed visas on all those countries.
Yeah, you can't imagine somebody getting
a visa. Well, guess what? Canada is not going to give anybody a visa to come to Canada if they think they're going to claim refugee protection. So it means that you are, and in many instances, refugees can't get passports, particularly where you're either in two situations. You can't get passports where it's the government that's persecuting you, but also you can often can't get passports in countries that are in are collapsed in strife. Somalia would be a classic example of that. So because of that, refugees are usually irregular arrivals. But what Canadians should know, and what people should know everywhere, is that in the Refugee Convention and in international law, refugee claimants do not have to have valid documents. You cannot, as Canada is a signatory to the International Convention on Refugees, we cannot punish a refugee for arriving in Canada without a valid passport or without a valid document. I mean, that's part of the game, and it should make sense to everybody that when you flee a country, often you're grabbing, you grab your children and maybe a few things, and you get out of the country. So you don't have the proper documentation, and refugees are permitted to do that as long as they can prove they actually have fear of persecution.
From what I'm hearing and what I'm learning about the changes to the system, it appears to me that it's geared now to create larger population of basically people living and working under the table, living in a black market economy because they can't get work permits, they have to wait to appeal, etc., etc. But what's most concerning to me is realizing that their children are penalized as well.
Well, that's right. That's true. But I would, in terms of people that are essentially going into some kind of underground economy, the first thing that's happening, as I noted earlier, is that people are not just coming at all. And if a refugee claimant arrives here, they can't apply for a work permit for 3 months. Well, as I've described, most will have their decisions decided within either 30 days of arrival plus 15 days for the processing, so anywhere from 45 to 75 days is when most claims will first be heard. So that's not really an issue in regard to the underground economy. Where you'll have underground economy occurring is if someone makes an application for refugee status and then they are refused and they don't get an appeal. And if they're desperate and are convinced that they will be harmed or killed if they go back to their country, those are the instances where they ordinarily go underground. But I'm not certain, and nobody knows at this point because it's too recent, the degree to which the new system is actually increasing the number of people going underground. And why I say that is the number of removals that are happening, of deportations that are happening, has really shot up in the last couple of years. That's simply because the government has made a policy decision to put more resources into it and are removing more people. But what your listeners should understand is many, many refugees who are legitimate claimants, and I say legitimate in the sense that they came here with a fear of persecution, many of them still comply and allow themselves to be removed, even though they're going back to horrible threats of death or injury, because they just give up. So in terms of the people going underground right now, I suppose the other thing to say, which is important to know, is Canada has not had a huge problem with an underground economy and people living in Canada illegally. No one knows how many there are because that's the nature of if they're unregistered and unknown, but the guesses are anywhere from 40,000 to about 150,000. That's not a large number of people. In contrast, in the United States, there's somewhere between 12 and 15 million illegal residents of that country. And the reason why we haven't had so many, though, and this is where your question is germane and I think correct, the reason we haven't had so many is because everybody's had access to our refugee system. The system, it is true, I think, went too long before final removal. It could be 3 or 4 years, but people could work, their children can go to school, etc. They would have access to medical care, etc. So the reason people register and are known within the system is because they were treated reasonably fairly. And that's not happening now.
So there's no incentive for people to register?
Well, there's far less incentive to register than there was before. I mean, the great majority of people are still making the application, but the question arises, and we don't know statistically the answer to this yet, if they're not treated fairly, if they don't get a fair opportunity for the decision, how many are going to comply with the removal as opposed to how many are out of desperation are going to go underground? And we just don't know the answer to that question and probably won't for another 3 or 4 years until it's possible to develop more data.
And
the other thing you ask about children, though, and it is worth noting, is that along with its refugee policy, its medical care of refugees was changed a year and a half ago by the government as well, and essentially they withdrew a great number of medical services for refugees, again, based on different categories. So regular refugees, they will receive treatment if they have serious harm or serious injury. So that could be anything. It could be cancer. It could be diabetes. It could be a serious psychological condition. In many instances, though, they don't get medication. But far worse are people that are in this one of the other categories, the designated countries category, and they receive no medical care unless their medical condition is a threat to Canadians. So, for example, if you had tuberculosis, then you would, or malaria, you would receive medical treatment. If you had cancer or diabetes, there would be no medical treatment afforded whatsoever. And that is, it's a drastic, it's an inhumane policy. It was struck down by the federal court in a decision by the federal court in May as cruel and unusual treatment, particularly of children. However, the government is appealing that decision, and while it's under appeal, the order is not in effect, and so refugees, and particularly those in the designated categories, are receiving very little medical care. To be fair, two of the provinces, Ontario and Quebec, have stepped in and said they would provide the medical care on humanitarian grounds, but it's still not near as much, and the essentially, the federal government has abandoned its responsibilities in regard to the medical care of refugees.
We've heard a great deal about that in the media. You know, the doctors themselves have banded together to protest this and express...
Well, more than protest, they protested, but actually it was, I am the chair of the advocacy committee for the Canadian Association of Refugee Lawyers, and it was the acronym is CARL, but Carl, along with the Canadian Doctors for Refugee Care, we were the parties that actually sued the government and said, what you're doing is wrong, it's unconstitutional, and that's what the federal court judge said in May. She said, actually, you're right. They are denying fundamental medical care to people that require it and need it. So you're right. The doctors not only protested, but they've been very forceful in participating in the legal action to strike down the legislation.
How long will it be, do you think, until you get the following decision?
Right now, the government is delaying as long as possible, even in terms of filing the appeal. They haven't done it yet. They have until about the first week in October, in which case they will do it. And after they file it, it could easily take another year. What the judge said in her decision was that delays, continued delays, would cost lives. Everything that the doctors tell us say that is correct. Much of it is lack of preventative care. It's not just the urgent care when it arrives, but it will cost lives, and it's going to be at least another year before I think there's going to be a decision from the Federal Court of Appeal. And the government has been adamant. They have not shifted one iota in their position. All of the factual findings of the court, which were, for example, the government said this was intended, it only applied to bogus refugees, completely false. It applies to all refugees. It said it was intended to deter fraudulent refugees from coming to Canada. There's nothing in the policy that shows, or in the outcome of the policy, that would reasonably lead one to conclude that it would deter fraudulent refugees as opposed to regular refugees. It's actually extremely punitive, and the court, in its factual findings before conclusions of law, was quite clear that the government's policy justifications were unfounded. What is difficult, and I will say this as someone who's practiced in refugee law, and then, as I say, I was a board member for 7 years before being the chair of the board, and so I've really worked on refugees from both sides of the aisle in terms of representing refugees and working within government. And what is painful to see is that Canada was widely respected for its policies, its treatment of refugees. In 1986, Canada received the Nansen Medal, which is given by the United Nations to usually an individual who has been outstanding in promoting or affecting the protection of refugees. Well, in 1986, the people of Canada received that medal, and it is the only time in the history of the medal that it was granted to a people. So Canada has had an extremely positive and encouraging view of refugees, and actually not just in the view, but in actuality their treatment of refugees. They really have been an inspiration to many other countries in the world, and so much of that has just been taken away or undermined in the past few years. And it's a great shame.
I keep wondering, with this, the lack of health care, what happens to a pregnant woman arriving here?
Well, I can tell you what happens to a pregnant woman. Up until Ontario just introduced its policy about 4 or 5 months ago, in Quebec they were very prompt in doing so, but in most places across Canada, and even now in Ontario, there's virtually no prenatal care. So if a woman is at risk in any way, she can, in many instances, will just receive no assistance. When she shows up at the hospital to have the birth, then the birth will take place in the hospital. If there are postnatal problems, particularly requiring any form of special medication or special care or special physiotherapy or anything, except for Ontario and Quebec, that won't be available. There are already people who have died in this country, refugees who have died in this country because of this policy. And it's shocking. There's no other word for it. It's just utterly shocking that it took a federal court decision really to even incite much media interest or public interest in the issue.
Now, of course, if the refiling happens in October and it's another year, we're into the federal election campaign. What happens then?
Well, the Liberals have already taken the position, and the NDP have taken the position. Now, I should be clear about this. I believe they've taken the position. They've certainly made promising statements. But I expect that if there were a government other than the Conservative government, that the policy would be rescinded and they would go back to the policy that had been in place since 1956, which is to provide basic medical care for refugees. Jason Kenney repeatedly used the expression gold-plated medical care, better than Canadians receive. Again, a complete nonsense. But basic medical care would be, I think it would be reinstated by any of the other political parties if they became the party in power.
Thank you for speaking with me.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye.